Does the religious tradition here at Chautauqua, does it date back to the very founding of this institution?
Absolutely, to the very, very beginning. Actually, the founders, one was a Methodist bishop, and the other was a very, very active Methodist layman. And they founded Chautauqua to teach Sunday school teachers, if one can imagine that today.
Yeah, yeah.
Their belief, really, it's very interesting to me. Their belief was that for democracy to succeed, you had to have an informed electorate. And as church people, they felt that it was the job of the church, not so much to inform people on political issues as to inform them on moral issues that played into political life.
And at first it was mainly Protestant, but it really today is very ecumenical.
Yes, Chautauqua began absolutely as a Protestant, very much Protestant, and grew over the years to take in almost all the mainline Protestant denominations. And then from the beginning, of course, there were Catholics, there were Jews that came as speakers, but we kind of look at who's building a house here? And the houses mark the different denominations. And we're so pleased now to have both a Jewish house and a Catholic house. And just last week, we had a major conference in committing Chautauqua to expanding to include the world's religions.
And you focus on that we all have the a common ancestor in Abraham, and that there really shouldn't be the divide we see today.
We try to do is really to help people see that among the Abrahamic religions, Judaism being the oldest, and then Christianity, and then Islam, we all have the same patron, and that's Abraham. And so we're all rooted essentially in the same belief system. It has played out, of course, very differently over the years, and each of these religions is very unique unto itself. But the possibility for cooperation is enhanced, I think, by having Abraham as father to all.
You hold interfaith lecture series daily at the Hall of Philosophy. Describe its intent.
Every day at 2:00, we have a lecture often built on the theme that people hear in the morning. But what we've done over the seasons is to take what we call a different angle of vision on that theme. And what we try to look at, I call it lived religion. What does it mean when you say you're a religious or a spiritual person? How does it affect your everyday life? And so we try to take our lectures from an interfaith perspective and say, well, let's look at week 2 coming up, in which we're going to look at what's at stake in this election in which we're about to engage. Not so much who's going to win or lose, though everybody wants to know that, but essentially it's what's at stake. And if you look at that from a religious spiritual perspective, you say, how will the poor fare? How will we deal with issues of peace and with justice? And so it's a rather different look at the theme.
Well, let's focus more on the daily theme here, or the weekly themes, because as you said, each week has some impact here. In week 2, let's talk about some of the issues more in depth. You said focusing on the poor, that type of thing.
Well, we begin that week with Sister Joan Chittister. Probably it couldn't be more current than at the moment when the Catholic Church is dealing really with the future of the nuns. And so we have one of the nation's perhaps most famous nuns leading the week off. And we're asking her the question, what's at stake in this election? Well, you can be sure that she will take a look at the issues of religious freedom. She certainly will take issues of the poor, because she's been very much involved in that. And I can't imagine Joan Chittister not talking about women.
Yeah.
How is this election going to affect women?
The next week is the big idea, inspire, commit, act. And I have to imagine that tremendous religious component in that discussion.
Well, it's made for religion. And we're very lucky to have Krista Tippett, who has her own regular program on radio at this point and is nationally known. And she's going to be interviewing a group of people whose very lives stand for that. I mean, I'm looking at Wednesday, where we will have Joan Halifax. She's a Buddhist, very much been a Buddhist teacher, committed her life to being a Buddhist later on in her life. And so she's going to talk about her, what was her inspiration in that, and what commitment did that call her to? On Tuesday, we're going to have Father Greg Boyle. He's probably fairly well known by many people as the founder of Homeboy. And he, too, has said he wanted to help boys that were in trouble. How would he do that? And so he began this program called Homeboy. And it's definitely, he was inspired, he committed, and he acted. And so the week goes.
Yeah, yeah. The following week, water matters, and water, obviously, a key part of any religious tradition, especially when it comes to baptism.
Well, that's right. And what we have done, because we're hoping this will be helpful to people, is we will look at it from the Christian, Jewish, Buddhist, Hindu, and Islamic perspective. And we are going to ask that very question. What does the role of water play in your religious life? But also, every single one of them, we're going to ask them and have asked them to talk about, why does water matter? And it is the future of the world may very well be tied to whether or not there is enough water.
Week five, the international issues of involving Pakistan. The control of Pakistan, and whether it's a secular nation or run by Muslim fundamentalists. Are these some of the things that we're going to be discussing?
One of the things we want to do, and this is the second time we've done this. When we had a week on Cuba, we decided that we wanted to hear from Cubans. Not Americans who are expert on Cuba, but from Cubans. And that's what we're doing here. All of our people are from Pakistan. And three of them will travel from Pakistan, two here just for our lecture series. One is a major businessman, and he cares enough about what's happening in his country that he took Karen Armstrong's book on compassion, had it translated into Urdu, the language of Pakistan, and has distributed at his own expense throughout the country. And Karen Armstrong will come to end the week on Friday, and she and Amin, the businessman's name, they will talk about what does it mean when a business person with resources says, I'm worried about my country, I want them to learn about compassion, and then takes a resource like one that Karen Armstrong wrote and gives it to his whole country to read and to use. Pretty amazing story.
The week on digital identity, I mean, that's so focused on what's happening today with computers and the internet. Is there a religious component here?
Well, you know, this is really was probably, I've got to confess, sometimes these themes are a bit of a challenge. This was a bit of a challenge, but like everything else, you know, for me, I have to become a student of issues that maybe I haven't delved into. And what I began to find out, what better person to ask than Paul Rauschenbusch, who was the chaplain at Princeton and now is the religion person at Huffington Post. Without the digital world, he wouldn't be a reporter. So he's coming to talk about what does it mean in the world of religion. And he's going to be followed by one of Chautauqua's all-time favorites, Otis Moss III. We know him as a preacher. But we also have seen him stand with his laptop and read the scripture out of his laptop. And he communicates very much with his congregation in that way. So he's going to talk to us about, of his generation, how is it that the digital world and the religious world have to come together? He will say it's a must.
Very easy for the next week, the ethics of cheating.
Yes.
Very much a moral issue, religious issue. I mean, lying is one of the, you know, Ten Commandments.
Well, and one of the things that we did in our theme, we said we want to talk about what is the root of cheating. And so our theme for the week is creating cultures of honor and integrity, that perhaps cheating is rooted in a cultural lag that we have, or even a cultural misstep that we've taken, where we're not trying hard enough to create cultures of honor and integrity. And when you think about it, what does cheating come from? It really comes from a lack of a kind of internal moral understanding of honor and integrity. And we got this from the man who is now head of athletics at the University of Michigan, mm-hmm. who said when he came to Michigan, the charge they gave him was really to create honor and integrity of a culture that might break the cheating that goes on in many, many places. So we're going to look across that spectrum, and I think I'm very proud of this week. Andrew Young is going to be here. He's going to talk about his job as a former mayor and how he had to confront these issues, his job at the United Nations, the vast variety of experience that he's had. And then we have Saeed Saeed, who's head of one of the largest Muslim organizations in this country, and he most assuredly will talk about the strains within Islam between the violent strain and those who are taking the religion for what it really is and acting it out in its most wonderful ways. And so I think it's going to be a very, very rich week.
The following, which leads into the next week, radicalism, and we see radicalism all across the world, and some see it as disruptive and bad, but radicalism also is a force of change.
Well, what we're going to do is take a look at burden or blessing, and we've asked each of our speakers, if they not to make a choice particularly, but to take a look at it, and I think that too is a very, very strong week. Eboo Patel, who's a young Muslim who has started the Abrahamic Youth Corps, and he's taking young people and helping them get involved in their life and in their community. Many would say he's a radical within his own faith, because he's taking it, he's a radical to the positive. And part of what we want to point out is, yes, this is also possible for radicalism to have a very positive direction. I mean, Martin Luther King, certainly in his day, would have been considered a radical. But many of the changes that he brought about have been extremely positive for the nation. So we'll take a look at that. John Chain, who was Bishop of Washington, he's an excellent speaker on this subject, and he's going to talk about radicalism in the eyes of faith. What does it look like from a faith perspective? Has the faith really its great people always been radicals? We have to ask that question, because possibility that that's true. And then the last speaker that week is going to be great. Arthur Waskow, he's a rabbi. He definitely is a radical in many ways. And now his newest thing is to organize people over 75 that have had in their lifetime rather radical lives. They've worked in many ways. They're all leaders in their churches. And so he's now saying to them, now that we're seniors, what is going to be our new position? So he's going to bring three seniors whose names we're going to know. I mean, they're people who worked for Dr. King, people who worked in a lot of the movements of our time for South Africa and some of these movements. And they're going to talk about what did it mean, and more importantly, what does it mean now?
And then you conclude with the President's Club, and we do know as a fact that religious beliefs do influence how presidents carry out policies.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we're privileged to have are a group of scholars in this week, and what we've asked them really were, what are the ethics of presidential power? One of the toughest things, I think, about being president, I stand in awe of our presidents. They face terrible decisions. And so we begin with a Lincoln scholar who will quite obviously look at the Civil War and all of the issues that went around that. And how was it that Lincoln came to the kind of ethical decisions he was forced to make, send people to war? But on behalf of justice. And then the next day we're going to have a scholar who will look at Truman. Well, we all know. Probably of all the presidents, immediately what comes to mind is the atom bomb. How was it decided? How did he himself kneel on his knees and ask for guidance? How did he make a decision like that? Of course, we know more about it now than he did then, but it was a terribly hard decision. And then the next person is somebody the people know here, and he's going to take a look at Johnson and Kennedy. And obviously there we have civil rights with Johnson, and with Kennedy we have the Cuban Missile Crisis. And so it goes. I mean, you just can. And then finally we have James Dean, who worked with Nixon. We all remember the name. And he will talk about the Nixon decisions and how they came about and the ethical decisions. And then we'll end the week with someone who will say, what does the president face when they have to make these ethical decisions? And has not every president? And are we not all affected by these decisions for generations to come? And maybe he'll touch on what is this next president, whoever it may be, what might be the decisions that they have to face, certainly economic ones.
You know, there's so much focus because it's the signature event of the morning lecture series. But these speakers in the afternoon, I mean, John Dean, you know, so much in the news this week because of the 40th anniversary of Watergate. Well,
one of the things that we have discovered is that there's quite a complementarity between the morning and the afternoon. The morning lectures are intended to be secular, and they deal in a secular way with important subjects. The afternoon asks the question of, what does faith matter? What does it mean? How do we live out our faith? And because Chautauqua has such a rich history, there's many people who come here, if you ask them, are you religious? They might say no. And if you say to them, do you have a spiritual life? Are you? Well, of course. And so for a lot of people, they're searching in their own life for how you make decisions on some tough issues. And we find many people will go to both morning and afternoon lectures. But sometimes there's a unique group of people who say, this is what I'm looking for at Chautauqua. And we can't forget that every Sunday we also have wonderful preachers coming, very well known across the country. And to me, it's always a miracle when I look out at that audience, and Sunday after Sunday we have over 3,000 people. That's a rather amazing. And one of the most important things about the religious services is that we very much want local people to be part of this. They get to hear a 200-member choir and good preaching, and Sunday's a free day at Chautauqua. There's no gas, no gate pass that you have to have.
Well, I wanted to bring that up as a topic because, Sunday seems to be the day that goes back to the roots of Chautauqua,
right,
with its stay-long devotion to services and sacred music. It's really not a big program day, but...
No, it's not a big program day. But it offers a variety of things for people who come. We really love to talk to the local community and say, you know, we encourage you to come this day because you can start your day out with a service. But it's also more than that. You can spend the whole day here, bring the kids, go swimming. It's a wonderful way to spend a day at Chautauqua. And we have a variety. We very purposely choose ministers, not only of different denominations, but of a kind of different mindset about ministry. Some would be perhaps described as more liberal, some more conservative. But we purposely choose people that we think will appeal to a Chautauqua audience. One of the things Chautauqua told us was, don't so much give us professors, give us preachers who preach to an audience in the winter, to a congregation. And so we think of ourselves as a congregation. And, you know, every time I stand up there Sunday after Sunday and I look out there and I know the stories of a lot of people's lives, there is a lot of reasons for people to be there to pray. There's suffering that goes on in people's lives, even at Chautauqua. And the fact of the matter is that people come to church here for the same reasons they do at home, for some kind of spiritual answer to life's difficult problems.
I should know this, but I need to ask, are you a minister in your
home? I am.
Okay.
I am. Mm-hmm. I'm an ordained minister. I have credits in two denominations, which is kind of unusual, but it's partly because I spent most of my life in ecumenical work, and one is the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, and the other is the American Baptist Church.
But how long have you been here now?
I've been here 12 years.
12 years.
Years.
I've been coming
since I was a child. Yeah. I came here with my parents, so I grew up in Youngstown, Ohio, and my grandfather was a minister, and he preached here. So it's quite a wonderful thing.
So is it different from what you were doing before? I mean, being in charge the religious programming here. It has to be a lot of administrative work as opposed to, you know, spending, you know, time preaching and working and counseling people.
Well, all of those things go on. What people forget here is that we do weddings, we do funerals, we do pastoral counseling. We do a fair amount of that. And I do think of this place as my congregation. I feel very much at home, and I really am happier when people think of me as their pastor, not so much the director of the department. Yes, we have to do all that goes with that. But in my own heart and soul, and hopefully with Chautauqua, they think of me as their pastor, because that's the role that's the finest role you can have.
The pastor of Chautauqua.
Yes.
Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Yes. Anything else you want to add that might not have touched on?
We have a lot of programming. Yeah. About 40% of the institution's program is in one way or another in the religion department. We have a Sunday school service. Mm-hmm. The one thing I would add is that I would want people to know that every Friday we have Muslim prayers open to everyone, and on Saturday there is a Kabbalah Shabbat service for the Jewish community, and on Saturday, a full Jewish synagogue service held at Hurlba Church, where they have been sensitive enough to cover over the Christian symbols when it's time for synagogue, and so people can go and feel at home. So we have very much an Abrahamic presence on the grounds. I wouldn't want people to think that we only have Christian services, because we try very hard to accommodate the different religions and welcome them here.
Well, I recall when I spent several days here broadcasting live from the Hultquist porch that my wife joined me, and we went to daily mass, and the mass was actually held in the Episcopal chapel. And
that's right. Exactly so. I mean, and it's
great
always
example of what
it is
about.
One of these things. I mean, on Sunday morning, it's really quite wonderful. People have services in their own denominational houses, and you can walk down the brick walk, and, you know, you hear the Lutherans singing something typically Lutheran, walk past the Episcopal church. They're having communion in the Episcopal way. You walk past the disciples, and they're having a service. And all of these people, I am amazed, all of these people go to their own denomination, and then they come to the ecumenical service. So there's a big plus in that, I think.
Yeah.
It's a spiritual crowd that comes here. We're grateful for that.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.